Welcome to Vital Voices. Our topic today is the recent outbreak of cyclosporiasis cases across the country. Reports of people getting sick from the microscopic parasite Cyclospora are now coming in from coast to coast. To help us understand cyclosporiasis, we welcome internationally known infectious disease expert Dr. William Schaffner. Dr. Schaffner is professor of preventive medicine in the Department of Health Policy and professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Dr. Schaffner, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule at Vanderbilt University Medical Center to speak with me today.
I'm happy to be with you.
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that a significant number of Americans had never even heard of cyclosporiasis or the cyclospora parasite before this summer. Is this the largest outbreak you've seen in your career?
It's certainly the largest outbreak by far that I can remember, both in its size, the number of people affected, and its geographic spread. And so it's certainly a notable event.
Let's talk about the geographic spread for a minute. As we're speaking right now, how extensive is it throughout the country, and how does that compare with, say, the spread from last year or previous years?
Well, in previous years, during the late spring or early summer, there were a few cases of cyclosporiasis that would occur here and there, and there might be a few small clusters of cases, the source often undetermined. But this year, we have this large number of cases, and they are concentrated principally in the eastern part of the United States. Both the state of New York and the state of Michigan have had the bulk of cases, but others have occurred elsewhere. We in Tennessee have had a handful or a double handful of cases.
The fact that it is occurring so frequently in, say, New York and Michigan, does that give you any kind of clue as to its origin?
Well, it certainly suggests, because of its wide distribution, that it's not due to a series of local sources. So the suspicion is that some nationally distributed product of some sort, probably produce of some kind, and salad is been talked about as a candidate, but it hasn't been determined, is the source of this. You know that irrigation water in other countries, more so than in the United States, may not be fully treated and chlorinated. So it might be the source of the contamination for what is still a postulated, widely distributed sort of produce.
Let's go back to a definition. This is not a bacterium, but rather it is a microscopic parasite.
That is correct. So the cause of this outbreak is larger than a bacteria. But interestingly enough, we can treat this infection with an antibiotic as though it were a bacteria.
Yes.
And if there's a ray of sunshine in this, that's it.
All right. What are the most common symptoms that a person should look for, and how soon do those symptoms appear after a person's initial exposure to the parasite?
Let's start with the exposure. Once that occurs, it can take quite a while for this parasite to initiate symptoms. How long? A week, week and a half, or even two. That's the reason, incidentally, why it's so challenging for investigators to try to find a common food among the people who've gotten sick, because it's very difficult to remember what you ate last Tuesday.
Right.
So in any event, the so-called incubation period is prolonged, but when it begins, it can begin suddenly with diarrhea, often vomiting, stomach cramps, loss of appetite, feeling poorly, and also a low degree of fever. Now, untreated after several miserable diarrheal days, mm-hmm. you can get better, but it can recur and then get better. and recur yet again. So it can persist, unlike other forms of diarrhea, for weeks and even beyond a month.
What can clue a person in that this might be cyclosporiasis as opposed to your common everyday, what we call stomach bug?
Well, diarrheal illnesses seemingly are pretty much the same. And so it's very difficult to determine what the cause might be just from the symptom complex. However, if you're in New York or Michigan, well, that's an issue. Your risk of cyclosporiasis is higher. Also, of course, if your diarrheal episode is persistent, that's another clue.
I don't believe at this point there have been any deaths as a result of this outbreak in the U.S., but you know, if this is left untreated, let's say in the case of an immunocompromised person, I mean, is there a very serious risk?
Well, there is a risk of hospitalization and a remote risk of dying, and that comes largely from dehydration, the loss of fluid from vomiting and diarrhea. So we are concerned about older, frail people, people who have underlying chronic medical conditions such as diabetes and, as you mentioned, immune compromise, and pregnant persons. So those are all, and the very young. And that's why we're concerned about attending to these people, making sure they get symptomatic as well as good antibiotic treatment as quickly as possible.
All right, we're going to the grocery store, we're going out to eat in a restaurant. What should we look for? What should we order? What should we avoid right now?
Well, how risk-averse are you? If you're being very, very risk-averse, well, at the present time, I think you would be avoiding lettuce, and certainly if you're in the supermarket, avoiding bagged salads at the moment. Eat other kinds of produce. And when you bring the produce home, wash it very, very thoroughly. The mantra is wash it, peel it, and cook it.
Even though it says pre-washed on the bag, you should follow that procedure.
I would definitely pre-wash everything at home. And if you're buying head lettuce, you might even want to strip off the outside group of leaves, because if there is contamination, it's most likely to be on the outside rather than in the interior.
All right. If you're cooking that fresh produce, what is the minimum temperature that the food should get up to in order to kill the parasite?
Up to about 150 or 165 degrees cooking temperature will kill it. If you're sauteing your spinach, for example, do it for about a minute and a half or two. That should get it.
How hardy is this particular parasite?
It's reasonably hardy. It can survive for some time, but one of the better aspects of this, if you wish to consider it that way, is that person-to-person spread likely does not occur.
Yes.
Could it? Maybe. But the standard teaching is that you have to get it from the outside. You can't give it to someone else.
Back to eating practices and food for a minute. Is it generally safer while this parasite is so active in the country to stay with locally grown or homegrown produce, or are there dangers there?
I would think, since we're looking for a nationally distributed product, if you can get something grown locally on a local farm, for example, your risk assuredly is much lower.
When public health officials try to track down the source of a parasite like Cyclospora, what do they do? What methods do they use to identify possible sources? How does that work?
They do several things. The most important is to interview the affected patients to get a food history to try to determine what they've eaten, looking for things that people who are sick have in common. What have they all eaten? And then you try to get examples of that product and test it in the laboratory. And because the incubation period is so long, it's very difficult to get accurate food histories back several days, a week, or even 2 weeks before. Heck, I don't know what I ate last Tuesday.
How well equipped do you think most walk-in clinics are, or most doctors' offices are, in diagnosing and treating cyclosporiasis?
I think the awareness of cyclosporiasis has increased dramatically. Before this outbreak, I think it was known to we infectious disease specialists, but with all of the publicity, I think it must be on everyone's mind, and they must be thinking about it when they encounter just about any patient who comes in with abdominal pain, a little bit of fever, and certainly a diarrheal illness. They can send specimens off to a laboratory to make the diagnosis.
Yeah, I'll have to admit, a couple of months ago, I actually had to look up the pronunciation of the word.
Well, that's frequent with these large scientific monikers, right? We in the infectious disease community know them as friends or enemies, but they're not as well known even to the average physician. But the awareness certainly has increased over the last couple of weeks.
And my word processing programs don't even recognize the word. I get the big red underline. I was looking at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website yesterday, and it says cyclosporiasis is often underdiagnosed. What exactly does that mean?
Many people with diarrheal illnesses don't go to a physician. If they do go to a medical provider, they may be treated symptomatically without diagnostic testing, because most people do recover from diarrheal illnesses without specific treatment. And then it would also require the medical attendant to ask for a specimen, which then has to be retrieved by the patient, a little bit of poop, and then that has to be sent off to a laboratory. So all of these steps in a row must be undertaken in order to get a specific diagnosis of anything that causes diarrhea, including cyclosporiasis. Many people don't go to the doctor. If they go to the doctor may not order a test because they can be treated symptomatically, they think.
You touched on this a bit, but how would you assess the public health response thus far to the cyclosporiasis outbreak in America?
I think the disease detectives at the CDC and their counterparts in state health departments have been working overtime trying to find out, trying to define the extent of this outbreak and to find the source. They're working on this as we speak. So I think the public health response has been good. Has it been somewhat delayed a little bit because the CDC and corresponding state health departments have had personnel and funding issues recently? Yes. This is yet another example that we need to keep public health strong, both at the national and the local level. When you need them, you need them. This is like the fire department. You can't recruit firefighters while the fire is going on. You have to be prepared in advance.
Excellent points. Let's change direction for a minute. I know you have done a lot of interviews about measles outbreaks. I wanted to ask you to talk for a minute about the effectiveness of the MMR vaccine and who should get it.
Well, let me say first that measles is not a trivial infection. So many of us today, young parents, have not experienced measles, and neither have the grandparents of the baby. And that's because measles vaccine has been so effective. I would mention, before we had measles vaccine in the United States, 400 to 500 children died each year, 400 to 500 of measles and its complications. Measles is nasty. Not only does it make a child very ill for a week or a week and a half, but it has complications, middle ear infections, but also pneumonia, and that frequently requires hospitalization, and also inflammation of the brain, encephalitis, can occur. So measles is definitely worth preventing. The measles vaccine, if given in the usual two-dose regimen, is about 98 to 99% effective in preventing measles lifetime. It's been used in the millions upon millions of doses around the world for now 40 years or and counting. So it is remarkably safe. It's one of our best vaccines, and it is remarkably effective.
Let's shift gears one more time before we close. COVID has not been a dominant presence in the news of late, but it certainly is still around. Are there any predictions about future COVID activity?
Shh, don't wake COVID up. It has not had its usual summer increase yet, and I hope it doesn't. And so far, so good. You know, COVID usually had two increases. It was like a double-humped camel. There was a summer increase, and then, of course, the one in the winter. And we hope that over time, COVID has moved into just an annual increase, but we're not there yet. But so far, you're right, COVID has been very quiet this summer.
Dr. Schaffner, thank you for keeping the country informed about public health issues of all kinds.
It is my pleasure. I enjoyed it greatly.
Yes, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our guest has been Dr. William Schaffner, Professor of Preventive Medicine in the Department of Health Policy and Professor of Medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Vital Voices is heard every Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2 here on WETS FM 89.5 and at wets.org. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.